This week, we are talking about what happens with diagnoses and making diagnoses, and then, of course, what happens when we make the wrong diagnosis.
Right.
Today, we're going to talk about, review five of the most commonly misdiagnosed mental health conditions. And the first one is not much of a surprise, but...
Right. Well, it's interesting. This whole business about misdiagnosis, there are very few data, surprisingly. I was surprised, and I thought, well, maybe I'm missing something as I went into this literature. But the other writers are saying the same thing, that there aren't good data on the percent or the rates of misdiagnosis. We know that it occurs, but it's very hard to determine exactly what the precise number is. Two numbers that have been published from years ago, one in 2012, in an issue of Current Psychiatry, said that general practitioners, I think we're targeting that. No, I'll take that back. That was a 2009 article, so 9 years ago.
In Lancet.
In Lancet, so that's a British medical journal.
Right.
Okay. And they evaluated general practitioners, and it's not to pick on general practitioners by any means, but they evaluated general practitioners, and they found that they identified depression incorrectly in 47.3% of their patients.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wrong diagnosis. And in 2012, there was a study in the United States, it was published in Current Psychiatry, that said that 26 to 45% of individuals referred to psychiatrists for depression failed to meet criteria.
Right.
So we're somewhere in that 40 to almost half of people are either missed or they're misdiagnosed.
Right.
Okay. That people think there is a mental illness when there isn't one, or they misdiagnose the one that they see. And I think there are both issues there. One is diagnosing the wrong one, and the other is missing the diagnosis altogether.
Right.
And then I guess a third is thinking there is one when there isn't one. So I guess there are three issues here.
Right. And it's important to point out that first, these were studies, and you know, you're going to go out there, if you do a search, you may find where people talk about misdiagnoses, but a lot of that data isn't necessarily research-driven
or
research-derived.
Right.
And so, you know, it could be anecdotal, it could be fabricated, it could come from a lot of different sources.
Right.
The second thing is that both of those studies focus primarily on depression.
That's right.
And
that's all they're talking about in these two studies.
Right. And we wouldn't, you know, it's not that surprising that a general practitioner may misdiagnose depression, because if a person comes in and they're complaining about depression, you know, they're going to respond to those reports.
Mm-hmm.
They may not necessarily do a thorough mental health evaluation. Mm-hmm. They're just going to treat the depression.
Right.
And the same with, you know, then they may therefore refer that patient to someone.
Right.
And then again, it'd be found that they don't really have the diagnostic criteria.
That's
so
right.
It's, to me, those are the best data we have, or the only data we have, but they're not necessarily indicative of what's really happening.
And you can understand why studying misdiagnosis would be so difficult, because none of us want to admit that.
Right,
right?
Sure.
How do you really find out? So these are very hard data. It's very difficult to extract these data.
Mm-hmm.
We don't keep track of misdiagnosis.
Right.
We can track how many diagnoses are made, but it's almost impossible to track misdiagnosis.
Right.
Okay, because nobody's going to admit that they did.
Right.
If somebody called me today and said, "Well, how many of you missed?" I have no idea.
Right.
I mean, I really wouldn't be able to give anybody an accurate number.
But that said, we know that this happens.
Right.
With some regularity, because we mentioned a study yesterday where physicians were given a set of symptoms.
That's right. You had physicians from the U.S. and physicians from England, from the U.K.
Right.
Right.
Right. And they were given case studies, and they came up with a variety of diagnoses based upon the data that was provided. But also we know this because, well, again, from our own practice, there are many times that patients are referred to us with a history of identified conditions or identified diagnoses that are not consistent with what we see as the symptoms or what we see as the presentation.
You know, one of the things we some of our work is done in residential centers, residential facilities. And frequently, the children and adults who end up in facilities end up there because they have been involuntarily hospitalized or they have had some other kind of breakdown that has occurred. And when a diagnosis is made under those circumstances, it's usually a pretty significant diagnosis. There's a lot of bipolar disorder or those sorts of diagnoses. And that may look like an accurate diagnosis at the time, but that's just a snapshot in a person's life. Yes, you went through a crisis, you were involuntarily hospitalized, so you're displaying certain symptoms. Diagnosis is based on those symptoms. That diagnosis has to be revisited over time, and frequently that isn't done. It's put on an admission sheet or a discharge sheet, and the diagnosis stays with the person, even though it may not be an accurate diagnosis. It sticks with you because it's part of your paperwork. It's part of your official record.
So we're gonna we found an article that talks about again presents the five most commonly misdiagnosed mental health conditions. And so we'll talk about those five because kind of agree. These are very commonly misdiagnosed. There are others, but these are among the most common.
These are common diagnoses, which I appreciate, that these are the ones that are most, I think, some of the most frequently occurring diagnoses. And there are some that are the most frequently misdiagnosed. Not missed, but misdiagnosed.
And it's, but it is missed as well, not just misdiagnosed, but missed. Like the first one is bipolar disorder. And again, it's not that's not surprising. In our practice, we see this very often that people will come in with a diagnosis of bipolar disorder and don't necessarily agree with that diagnosis. You know, people will come in and report mood swings or this symptom or that symptom, and some practitioners, based upon the way the patient presents, and we'll kind of talk about those issues over the next few days, will be diagnosed with bipolar disorder. They'll come in and you know, given given the benefit of the doubt, we'll just say that the circumstances have changed, or there's some additional information that suggests that the diagnosis isn't correct. So bipolar disorder is often misdiagnosed. People are often incorrectly identified as having bipolar disorder, but as the article points out, oftentimes, people who really have bipolar disorder are oftentimes diagnosed with something else first. And so there's a lot of errors there.
And what we have to remember, and we mentioned this yesterday, is that mental health diagnoses or mental illness diagnoses are based on symptom presentation. There are no lab tests. So we're looking at symptoms. And so all clinicians bring their interpretation to the symptoms. We try not to, we try to have specific criteria, but we're just looking at symptoms. So it's not it's not inconceivable that we could interpret those symptoms differently. However, with bipolar disorder, if a person presents with depression, if you seek help because you're in a depressive state, frequently you get a diagnosis of unipolar depression, rather than bipolar, because we don't see the, on that day, we only saw the depression.
And sometimes there hasn't been, been a manic episode.
And other times, what the bipolar disorder presents first with mania. So then a person comes in with symptoms of mania, which can look like ADHD or a number of other disorders.
Depending on what, at what point in the that cycle, that episode, you catch them.
So depending on, because again, it's a snapshot. The day that they come in for the visit, it's a snapshot, okay? And so you have to be very careful. But it's easy to misdiagnose bipolar disorder because the symptoms of the disorder change over time, and they mimic other disorders like ADHD and personality disorders.
So bipolar disorder is the first one mentioned, and for all these reasons, it's often misidentified. The second one is borderline personality disorder. And we received an interesting comment on one of our podcasts on our YouTube channel a couple of, maybe in the last week or two, in regards to the week that we did on bipolar disorder. We did a week-long series on bipolar disorder a couple months ago. And we, on one day, we talked about a subtype of bipolar disorder referred to as cyclothymic disorder, and it's sort of like a rapid cycling condition with a person going in and with emotional dysregulation. There's a number of manic and depressive episodes. A person's up and down quite frequently, and the person asked, you know, how do you differentiate between cyclothymic disorder and borderline personality disorder, because they both have that emotional dysregulation. And what happens is, and this kind of goes along with what you said, and again, it's something we'll be talking about later this week, depending on the way the patient responds to questions and the way in which the clinician asks questions, that differentiation is going to be more or less difficult. But the bottom line is that for borderline personality disorder, there are emotional dysregulation is just one symptom.
That's right.
There are, I believe, eight total. And there has to be five or more of them present to make a diagnosis of borderline personality disorder. So, you know, if a person is, you know, reports one or two of these symptoms and it's, again, misidentified or misattributed to a personality disorder, then they're going to be receiving this diagnosis incorrectly.
That's right. The diagnosis of borderline personality disorder is often a tricky one to make, especially if you only talk to the patient.
Right.
And that's another issue, is that the patient may give a very different story than the spouse or children or other family members or friends.
Right.
And so, again, you're getting just a portion of the entire picture.
Right.
You're getting a snapshot of a movie,
right?
And frequently we don't have the movie, we only have a snapshot.
Right. Okay.
And so we have to be careful because the symptoms overlap.
Right.
It looks the same.
Yes.
But it could be very different diagnosis.
Absolutely.
So. And so it is too with number three.
ADHD.
Our one that we have some familiarity with.
Or a lot of familiarity with.
No, it's something, I mean, more than 10% of children receive this diagnosis.
Yeah.
And 20% are suspected of having it. So.
And the issue here, and as you said, are suspected of having it. ADHD is one of those disorders, and we've talked about ADHD a number of times here on the podcast. Mm-hmm. ADHD is another one of those conditions that, you know, depending on what's going on in the environment, one may look as though they have ADHD. When we do presentations and workshops, we often say that, you know, we can create conditions in any setting, especially in a workshop or in a classroom or even in a home. We can create the conditions to elicit ADHD-like behaviors from just about anyone. You know, if I'm talking in a graduate level psychology course, and I start doing a presentation on molecular genetics, and I'm using words that they don't understand, and talking about it very quickly, and you know,
it's happening this semester. We are teaching an undergraduate course. And you can see as soon as you start to get a little too complicated, a little more complex than they're ready, you can see them drift away and they start to do other things.
Right.
Which is exactly what most people would do.
Right.
I mean, yes, you might be polite and pretend as though you're listening, but you can see them beginning to shut down as soon as the content gets a little bit beyond their level.
Right.
And we do that, I mean, that happens to K-12 students regularly.
Right.
Is that the teacher can start talking about things that they know nothing about.
Well, especially when you have, you know, the expectation that kindergartners, for example, will do book reports. You know, that creates an environment wherein they're going to look as though they have ADHD, ADHD simply because they're not ready for that level of content.
My 4-year-old grandson was visiting last week he visits a few times a year. Everybody wanted to know if he had ADHD. And I laughed because no, this is what a normal four-year-old acts like. Right. They have a couple minutes of attention span. Mm-hmm. He's very active, appropriately.
Right.
He has enormous energy that he has to keep getting rid of. Now, we had a house big enough that he could run around and do things.
Right.
And he destroyed our whole house, I mean, over the course of several days. Because that's what four-year-olds do. They take stuff out, and he's not putting things back yet.
Right.
You know, he tries to, and we help him out with that. But it looks like ADHD, but it's normal behavior for a four-year-old boy.
Right. Yeah. But depending on the environment and the expectations of the environment.
If he was in some houses, they would want to medicate him because he'd be touching things, and there's nothing he could break. I mean, there are things he could break, but there's nothing he could damage or destroy, or wasn't that important in our house, you know. We don't have poison plants and fish tanks and things around that he could get into. But in some environments, he would look like he would need some kind of intervention.
Right.
Because of the environment, not because of the behavior.
Exactly. So that's a big concern with ADHD is we often diagnose it in people who can't meet the expectations of the environment. Right. But it's because we fail to evaluate the appropriateness of the expectations of the environment.
Right, it's the expectation.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Number four is PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. Mm-hmm. And again, this is one of those that goes both ways as far as is often misdiagnosed in that we say that people have it when, you know, it could be a phobia or it could be something else that's going on. And also the other way where it's missed. People fail to identify particular traumas that could be eliciting the behaviors that are creating the stress.
That's right. People who have experienced a traumatic event can present with anxiety. They can present with depression. Mm-hmm. There's inattention, impulsivity. Right. And unless you know the whole story,
right.
I mean, frequently the patient, the client, won't mention the episode.
Right.
They don't think it's important, or
they don't want to talk about it,
or they've repressed it. Mm-hmm. They're avoiding it. They don't want to discuss it. I had a patient recently who had a very traumatic event when she was a teenager, and she just never talked about it. Finally, when she started, it began with, "I don't want to talk about that."
Mm-hmm.
But finally, I was able to coax it out of her. It took several weeks, several months. To coax it out of her, and finally she's talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Without knowing that event, you wouldn't know that. Knowing that event, you would never diagnose PTSD in this person. You diagnose a dozen other illnesses, but you'd never get to PTSD.
Absolutely.
As soon as she told me that, then I knew we were dealing with PTSD.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it's easy to make these misdiagnoses.
Right.
I mean, it's not due to it's not always due to incompetence.
Not always.
But sometimes it is,
right.
And we need to confront that one too.
Yeah, absolutely. And then finally, number five is anxiety.
Our good old friend anxiety.
Yeah. And this one is especially relevant in children because we were talking about ADHD a moment ago, and we throw the diagnosis of ADHD out there quite often.
Mm-hmm.
And many times, instead of ADHD, what they really have is anxiety.
Right.
Because anxiety can cause the same type of fidgetiness. It can cause the same type of inattentiveness and distractibility and forgetfulness and all that, all those same symptoms that we see with ADHD. But when a kid doesn't have the vocabulary or the insight or the awareness to identify and articulate anxiety symptoms, then that diagnosis isn't made.
One of the things I do when I teach graduate level courses, and we talk about autism spectrum disorder, one of the huge problems is anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that they have an anxiety disorder, it's that because of their autism, because of their ineffectual social skills, they become anxious, of course. We all become anxious in situations that we can't manage.
Right.
And so, you know, it looks like it's not a primary anxiety disorder, it's anxiety driven by another disorder, okay? But you have to be aware of those things. And anxiety, we used to say that ADHD, depression, and anxiety are genetically linked, and they kind of are, but it's also a symptom overlap.
Right.
You know, if you have one, if you know, kids who have ADHD, in their quiet moments, they are embarrassed, and mm-hmm. because they know they're not measuring right. up. Okay, yeah. So that can look like depression. They also become very anxious. Mm-hmm. So you have to be careful and sort these symptoms out, because we're right. dealing with symptoms, not lab tests. You have to be very careful in sorting these out and separating them out.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. So now, over the next couple of days, we are going to focus on challenges associated with diagnosing children. Mm-hmm. We've already kind of alluded to a few of them. We're going to also mm-hmm. then talk about challenges associated with diagnosing adults.
Right.
And then we'll end on Friday, and not end the week, but on Friday we're going to focus on clinician-based right. issues that contribute to making some of these right. misdiagnoses, mm-hmm. and that will be an interesting conversation.
We'll point fingers at ourselves. That
absolutely,
day, you know, which absolutely. Is which is good.
Right.
We have to constantly be evaluating and reevaluating what we do.
Right.
So
yeah, I think that I know here in our office we do that.
We do it a lot.
We really work to challenge each other to make sure that we're making the right diagnosis and that we're thinking of things as comprehensively mm-hmm. as possible.
Right.
I think we do an okay job of that.
We do. I think we do.
All right. So, well, that is it for today. So until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.